is Tansley Stearns.
Tansley Stearns is your greatest challenger and biggest cheerleader.
Inspirational human being who loves people.
Future forward leadership.
Tansley Stearns is a badass.
Tansley Stearns is my mom, my hero, and I love her very much.
I am Tansley Stearns, and this is Despite Impossible. I am a longtime credit union executive leading Community Financial as president and CEO. I have always admired and been inspired by people whose passion is boundless and who don't comprehend the word impossible. This show focuses on their stories. Today's guest is Cynthia Hutchison, a loving mother, advocate, volunteer, and author. She is also the Chief Executive Officer at the U.S. Center for Advanced Manufacturing and a World Economic Forum Fellow. Who is Cynthia Hutchison?
You know, first and foremost, and I think this sounds rather hokey, but first and foremost, I am a mother. I have two fabulous sons, and that is a wonderful job. Of all the things I've done, and I love my job today, my favorite is being a mom. And of course, that job continues forever, so that's great. And professionally, I'm an advocate for justice. I thought about this in terms of the arc of my career, which is rather unique, but the common thread from the beginning to end is really, in a word, would be justice. I believe justice is a critical thing that we can put it into our business, we put it into our social lives, we put it into our academic opportunities. So I think that's who I am, a seeker of justice.
Love that. Finish this sentence for me. The world will be a better place when?
People respected one another more without getting buried into specific issues. I often think about this in terms of politics. Most of us, if you're married, if you're a partner, don't agree on everything with that one person with whom you live every day. So the likelihood of agreeing with anybody in a political or business setting on everything is obviously non-existent. So we have to accept people where they are and find a way to allow differences to drive stronger relationships rather than weaker.
I love that. Yeah, I think it's so interesting because I do think we share a lot more than we maybe think that we do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When your happiest, most joyful moments you're listening to?
Birds in my backyard. I'm a very weird bird lady. I mean, you know, I really like, I feed the birds and I like sitting out. So this time of year, I don't get to do it as much. I like sitting out in the patio and listening to the different sounds. I've never yet investigated which one is which bird. I'm not that weird a bird lady. But I definitely, I find peace and tranquility in listening to the sounds of nature.
Mm. I know we don't do this very often anymore, but is there an album you listen to from the first song to the last?
There is probably one of my favorites, and I was thinking about it. And I hope the songs aren't too dark on it because that would perhaps portray me in a negative light. But it's and it's old. It's Jackson Browne's "Late for the Sky."
Oh,
that's
nice.
That's a beginning to end for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like. I think albums were written, Tansley, to be beginning to end. And I feel like the Beatles are rolling over in their graves for all those perfect time cuts they had.
Yes.
Being turned into a shuffle.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. There are certain albums that just you have to listen
to
the whole
story.
Thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a story.
Without question. Yeah. Without question. Tell us about a time you laughed out loud recently.
Recently. So I've got two sons. My younger son has Down syndrome. And first of all, he's very funny because he has a better social life than I do. You know,
yeah.
He went to Vegas with somebody for New Year's, had to get back because January 2nd, he was flying down to Florida to do a 5K with a group of friends. So when he did the 5K, I saw a video on him crossing the finish line.
Uh-huh.
Published on Facebook by a friend of his. I saw this video of my son tearing up and coming across the finish line, people cheering. And I'm like, this is amazing because he's really not a super ambitious runner.
Okay.
So I talked to him about it. I called him and said, that was amazing. He goes, wasn't it? He said, yeah, I pretty much walked the whole thing. And then when I got to the end and saw the cameras, I decided to pour it on.
Like, oh, that's hysterical.
It reminds me of how much we also think. Jordan has always stopped me in my tracks for how do we think people are? What do we think about someone? So obviously it's very easy when people, you hear about people with Down syndrome and people might say they're always kind, they're always loving, they're always whatever. No one's always anything.
No.
And I find that occasionally I mean, he so frequently outsmarts me that I'm thinking he's definitely got it going on. I never can undersell him. So I thought that was hysterical. He's like so proud of how clever he was to make it look good. My mom, I can't tell my mother. My mother's 90. I can't tell Grammy that he didn't really run the whole thing and sort of win the race. Just made it look that way.
There is wisdom in Cynthia's heartwarming story of her son, Jordan. Tempo is critical to running a race, and it helps us navigate our busy lives. Mastering the skill of knowing when to step on the gas and give it your all, and pacing yourself to endure the journey is not always easy. Jordan, if you're listening, huzzah, my friend, huzzah. When was the last time you danced so hard that your feet were sore?
I haven't, and that made me sad to think about that. I haven't danced enough. I don't know. I thought about that. I'm thinking, like, when did I last dance? Probably at a friend's daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
And it's not that my feet get sore that easily. It's that I haven't danced enough. So thank you for the inspiration, Tansley. I'm going to go dancing soon.
We need to. Mm-hmm. When you feel down, you heal by?
Reading.
Mm.
Yeah. Reading and or walking. I'm a walker. I live in Rochester. There's bike paths nearby, and I can go and, you know, hop on the Pine Creek Trail and walk for a couple hours, and it's very rejuvenating to me. It never fatigues me.
Is there a book that you're loving at the moment?
I'm actually reading, and I can't believe I forget the name, but The Interview. It was a gift from my son. The Interview between Barack Obama and Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, wow.
So putting two of my favorite people together, and it's quite fascinating. They start, if you've not read, they start it with the conversation about how they grew up.
Yes.
And how privileged Obama's upbringing was compared to Springsteen. He talks about being a high school dropout versus highly educated. They go through that, and their first common thread that they connect with is absentee fathers. Mm. So it's again, it's how there's always a connecting thread, and I'm really enjoying that one.
Wonderful. Who's someone you look up to?
Both of my parents. They're still alive. They're in their 90s, and there's a tremendous amount of grit that came from each of them and their backgrounds that I continue to look up to. I don't know. I don't feel like I have a public figure that I necessarily look up to. I've had the opportunity to work with the World Economic Forum, and I look at Klaus Schwab, and I guess I look up to him for starting something from nothing. Mm-hmm. I have a great deal of respect for anybody who starts a business.
Mm-hmm.
So starting something from nothing and then creating something of substance that's going to last and last beyond him is pretty impressive. But just an aside, I don't know that, yeah, like I said, I mostly look pretty close to home. And both of my sons are pretty inspirational in their own ways. So I keep it close to home.
Tell us about your impossible.
My impossible, I have two impossibles. The first one is, you know, I was very surprised and, to have a son with Down syndrome. That was shocking to me. I just didn't expect it. I don't know why. And probably at the risk of sounding, arrogant, I always thought I could deal with anything as long as my kids are smart.
Yeah.
And then, as I told you earlier, they are. So yes. So it broke down a barrier for me about what being smart is and how we perceive it versus what it really is. So advocating for Jordan became a huge part of my life and of his sibling too. I mean, his brother had to deal with me being an advocate for his brother.
Mm-hmm.
That was, and the impossible there was, I realized, if you go back, Jordan's now 33.
Right.
There were very few visible experiences to see people with Down syndrome in the community. And Down syndrome is the most visible disability other than a wheelchair. Like, people don't know when you're deaf right away. They don't even know some people are blind right away. But you know somebody's got Down syndrome. So that tends to be a blessing and a curse in school. Teachers were apprehensive because they already knew there was something different about him. But then teachers didn't expect a whole lot, which was also a blessing and a curse because I had to elevate them. So the impossible was getting the people around. Having a son with Down syndrome was not hard. interacting with the world with which he had to interact and elevating the expectations of everybody around him to provide him with opportunity to have a full and rich life was really hard.
Mm.
So that was the impossible. And I ended up developing, I did advocacy in a variety of areas, and I ended up writing a book. But prior to writing a book, I decided we needed a visual representation of people with Down syndrome that people could look at 365 days a year. Yeah. So as I was thinking that, I thought, well, we look at a calendar. So I hired a photographer. We did fabulous. She's a nationally ranked photographer. She's highly respected. We did beautiful photos of young people with Down syndrome. And I think back to this because there was nothing like this out there. I boldly titled it Beautiful Faces. The first cover girl was pretty little blonde on the cover. Her face was like the full size of the 8x10 calendar, and sold it to Barnes & Noble, and Barnes & Noble carried it nationally. So when I think about that if you go into Barnes & Noble for many years, you would walk in and in the calendar section would be a big face of a different child each year with Down syndrome saying beautiful faces. So I feel like it built an acceptance that was a groundswell, like the foundation for more academic acceptance, the foundation for more employment opportunities. So that was one of my impossibles.
Mm. What were some of the challenges that you faced that seemed insurmountable?
Finding a negativity where people don't know. I don't know if I found insurmountable as much as it was overwhelming that so many people had pre-decisions made, and it was so hard to overcome that. So it was pushing a rock uphill. So there were many years of pushing a rock uphill, and once you get to the top of it, you can stabilize for a little while, but it's hard to push a rock uphill every day, mm-hmm. week after week and month after month and year after year. And I did feel like when I ran the nonprofit, I did bold things because it helped me overcome that sense of difficulty. Mm-hmm. My first annual fundraiser, I asked an executive at Cadillac to sponsor, mm-hmm. and I knew him quite well. And he said, you know, I'll introduce you to a colleague at Chevy. And I said, no, I hear what you're telling me. Your son's a Cadillac, my son's a Chevy. I disagree. And let me give you the pitch line of why you're sponsoring this. And he ended up sponsoring it. So those kinds of things, that takes away a little bit of that uphill.
Yes.
But I don't know. I mean, things to what was insurmountable. It was difficult, but
right.
the hardest insurmountable part is the emotional fatigue it takes on you as as an advocate and as a mom, right. You know, in that dual role is that even when I made it, it was so much bolder than my son. I knew he was going to be fine, but I also felt like I had a voice and an ability to communicate with people on this. And just because you have a child with a difference or a challenge doesn't mean that you're born to be an advocate. I mean, we're not all,
sure.
You know, and God bless the child who doesn't have that parent.
Right.
So I became a voice for a much larger group, but it was a voluntary commitment.
On top of a lot of other commitments.
Yeah.
Was there a point in your journey where you felt like giving up?
Yes. And that's the insurmountable part.
Yeah.
That's a good point. It was as I moved through the journey, it started out being very visual, making people aware of kids with differences. And then it moved into another thing. My other son, by the way, was super helpful all the way. And they're only a year apart. They live together now. They're really close. But so having the support of both boys was great. But when I reached you go from visibility to academic justice, mm-hmm. which is not the same as, you know, equality. It's justice. It's that some kids need more help in class than others. They don't need the same as everybody. They need more. And when you move from that I got through that. Moving to higher ed, a little bit harder. Moving into employment became way too big for one person to advocate. So at that point, I knew that I couldn't continue to do advocacy unless I could redo the same thing over and over, but that's just not how I'm made. I could not carry the weight of that. Employment opportunities being systemic, national, global for people with disabilities, that was too big.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you share a story of a time where something went bananas that now you can look back and laugh about?
Why is that hard for me? Because I think that's probably a big part of my daily life.
We don't even see it as bananas anymore, right?
Yeah, it's just. And it probably is. It goes back to some of the things with both of my sons. My older son has had severe depression, which I didn't know. Wow. And it resulted in a very traumatic experience. And I look back at it now as, life went off the rails. I mean, wow. Went off completely off the rails. He spent 48 days in the hospital. So life is off the rails. But even now, and you could listen to this and hear it, he is better for that. I am better for that. And never in 1 million years would I have predicted that he would be working in the education field today and doing what he's doing. And I feel like this sometimes when things go bananas and go off the rails and turn out right, it's just that none of us wouldn't have thrown the bananas out there.
Right.
But once we slip and fall on them, we're like, yes. Oh, the banana worked. So
yes.
It's okay.
It's that perseverance, right?
Yes.
Addressing mental health challenges requires perseverance. The bravery required to work on yourself is easier to carry when you're not alone. I've been volunteering regularly at the crisis text line, and I've experienced the impacts that the heaviness of day-to-day life can have on all of us. If you need to talk with someone, call or text 988. So achieving your impossible is one thing, but there aren't any fairy tales with happy endings. We reach those milestones, and as you said, we keep going. What challenges is your impossible still facing?
Right now, mm-hmm. I have this unique opportunity. So I've gone from all this advocacy work into working for a nonprofit that is about technology and manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And at first glance, it might not seem like a segue, but it's always like I've always had this secret segue. I knew when I went into this, it was, first of all, a good fit. My background, I had a technology background. I can write. I had this, diverse background. So once I got into the role that I'm in now, where I'm working out of Michigan, but running a national center, which is tied to a global organization in Geneva, I stepped back and thought, what is the one thing I have not? Where is my impossible? My impossible is getting employment to be truly at parity for underrepresented populations, whether they were underprivileged, undereducated, impoverished, disability, but there's an entire previously incarcerated. This is this huge segment of the population that is not even on people's radar for potential employees. And now I have been gifted with this unique platform to say, so my impossible is how do we get this done? And now I'm finding people in Colorado, in California, in Sweden who are doing things like this. So by having a big world and getting some big voices, I feel like we can maybe tackle this next impossible. So I have an impossible ahead of me. And it's going to be, how do I tie the work I'm doing today into this moment where we can propel opportunities for a broader swath of population?
Love it. What advice do you have for people who have this fire in their belly, but they've got a fear of taking that next step? And how do they move into action?
It really requires tremendous courage. And I don't know that people think it at the moment. So I think if you have the passion and you allow the passion to lead you, and there's always that thin line, it's great, but like you tell your kids, follow your passion. And then, you find out they're going to drop out of college and go do something you don't really think is a good idea. You have to live with that. So I don't know if you always follow your passion, but if you wake up with a fire in your belly about the same thing every day, there is a way to do it. And if the true fear is financial, being able to sustain your life, you need to start somewhere smaller. If you have any ability to take a year and, live off savings and go roll it out, I think most people need to roll the dice. When you look at it, America is made up of small businesses. Our growth comes from small business. We hear the stories about, we always hear stories, I think, about 10,000 people losing their jobs. You never hear about 10,000 people getting jobs. It's like a weird backwards dynamic. Mm-hmm. So we all worry about work, but I feel like if you have tremendous passion and some skills and a goal, it's usually worth trying it.
This concludes today's episode. For exclusive content, visit us at despiteimpossible.com and subscribe to this podcast.